Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
They're gonna kill the love of my life.
Casey!
If I don't go back to what I was doing.
Our line of work is quite brutal and quite ruthless.
How far would you go for love?
You steal a truck, bring it to me. Then you make your money.
Is it dangerous?
Of course it's dangerous!
Nicholas Holt, Felicity Jones, with Ben Kingsley and Anthony Hopkins.
All this trouble, all this pain for love.
Collide. Now playing. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13.
They're gonna kill the love of my life.
Casey!
If I don't go back to what I was doing.
Our line of work is quite brutal and quite ruthless.
How far would you go for love?
You steal a truck, bring it to me. Then you make your money.
Is it dangerous?
Of course it's dangerous!
Nicholas Holt, Felicity Jones, with Ben Kingsley and Anthony Hopkins.
All this trouble, all this pain for love.
Collide. Now playing. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13.
Christmas was fun, pleasant. Getting the family together. Always a ton of food, though. That's the issue, you know. You put on the pounds during the holidays, and it's like, oh my God, what happened? Hey, how you doing? Welcome. Earth Ancients is brought to you by Gaia. As you guys know, Gaia's got a special right now. For the first month, it's 99 cents. And what do you get for 99 cents? You know, like, hey, it's 99 cents, dude. It's a buck. But it's 7,000 titles. And those 7,000 titles are a lot of the subjects that we cover here on Earth Ancients, a lot of other subjects that I don't touch, a lot of the ancient alien stuff's there. There's a whole series on NASA's secret space program, a whole bunch on aliens. But there's a huge section on wellness and mindfulness, meditation, yoga, new techniques for mindfulness. If you don't know how to meditate, you know, meditation is a huge deal, and we don't talk about it enough here on Earth Ancients. We're actually going to be launching a new program next year, early next year. I'll announce it in January, but there's a new spinoff of Earth Ancients, and I'll talk a little bit about it again in the near future. But that show is going to cover meditation. And meditation, or quieting the mind, is a huge deal. But anyhow, Gaia.com/Earth Ancients. Hey, give yourself a gift in the new year, 99 cents. And then after that, it's $9. But you got to do it. You need to do it. It's not only amazingly rich with material, they have new programs that they're constantly launching, and they're going to be launching a Greg Braden series called Missing Links, which airs January 5th, 2017. And I hear great things about it. So check it out. Gaia.com/Earth Ancients. It's really cool. You know, I don't have enough time to look at it a lot, but once a week, I check out the programs, and there's just some really well done programming on that Gaia.com. Love it. Path of the Sacred Maya is coming up April 2nd through the 8th. We just need a few more people to join us. We heard from Miguel Angel last week, and he will be with us. It's April 2nd through the 8th, 2017. We fly into Mereda. And, hey, just going to Uxmal for one or two days is worth the trip, because that's a sacred place. It's the only area that you can climb on pyramids and other structures. All the other ones are off limits. And it's really a good deal. Now, I knocked off $600 for December. I'm going to hold that discount into January. So it's just a couple grand to fly in. All your food's covered. All the accommodations. We're going to hear from some specialists calling in from Skype, talking to us about the sacred sites there, how the pyramids operate. And then we'll visit each one of those locations in an air-conditioned bus. It's going to be great. Come out and join me. You can learn all about it. You can see the entire itinerary on earthancients.com. And again, April 2nd through 8th, come out and join me. I think you're going to have a good time. Hey, while you're on the website, go to the newsletter and also register. Scroll down past the Path of the Sacred Maya badge and sign up for the newsletter, because each month and throughout the year, I'm going to be giving away free ebooks, and I'll announce them as they're being distributed. And this is a great chance to get original writings from many of our authors. Many of the people who are on the program have blogs that are not available to the general public. And this is a way just to keep up on what's going on in the world. So earthancients.com, scroll to the bottom, register to get the goods. And there's a lot of stuff too. I have some material on the Facebook page, but it's just too much. So I'd like to put a little bit on the, in the newsletter, the Earth Ancient newsletter. So I hope you'll check that out. Okay, so today is a special presentation, a special holiday presentation, Crop Circles, A Force of Nature or Beyond, with Michael Glickman. I think you're going to like this.
Crop circles have been a fascination of mine probably for over 20 years. And in the late 1990s, there were a number of people that were researching, reporting on the crop circle phenomenon. And one of these people was our guest today, and that's Michael Glickman. And Michael's been studying crop circles for over 20 years. It's not something that he has been doing casually. He's a former architect, teacher, and inventor, and he wrote a couple of fascinating books. His early book was just Crop Circles, and then he followed it up with Chronography, excuse me, and then the book that we're going to talk a little bit about today, which is called Crop Circles, The Bones of Gods. Now, crop circles are a phenomenon that people just cannot explain. And the beauty of our guest today is that he is one of the top authorities in the field. And he is so enamored by these. He lives in a place called, I believe, we'll ask him in a second, called Pewsey Vale, England, which is right in the heart of the grain crops. So he's right able to see these phenomenon and experiencing them profoundly on a regular basis. Let me read something from this book, Crop Circles, The Bones of God, that I thought was interesting. How does mankind deal with miracles? This question has assumed a more than theatrical importance in the life of Michael Glickman, who has been witnessing the miraculous on a regular basis since he investigated his first crop circle in 1990. In the years since, an intense study of crop circle phenomenon in the regions of the most importance, the English countryside, has given Glickman extraordinary personal insight into a subject usually known only through secondhand reports and speculation. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be on it.
I have to say that I hadn't really looked at the book Crop Circles, The Bones of God until very recently, and it's a fascinating work. What was your first bit of interest in observing crop circles? Was it just a casual observation? Were you driving on the road and you saw something? What was it that really kind of triggered your interest?
Well, in the 80s, I was aware of the phenomenon, but I'd never visited it. And through the 80s, they were largely circles and rings, and the most elaborate form we got was called the quintuplet, which is actually the dice five spot with a larger mother circle in the center surrounded by four daughters. And I just thought, this is very interesting. I used to get a little magazine that showed occasional black and white photos. I thought, this is an interesting problem. And then in 1990, there was a huge 300-foot formation at Alton Barnes in Wiltshire, which broke all the rules. It wasn't a simple circle. It started to be geometrical. It had pathways and boxes and keys and claws. And I thought, I must go out to see this. I was living in London then. It was about 2 hours away. I went in to see it, and I think metaphorically, I never got out.
Interesting.
I was so astonished by what I'd seen.
Interesting.
I realized that this was something overwhelmingly extraordinary.
Interesting.
And since that time, crop circles have become my major interest and activity.
Fascinating. Some of the early reports by your contemporaries, people like Colin Andrews and others, would talk about a strange electrostatic discharge that came out of some of these early circles. Did you have that feeling? Did you get that sensation of electricity involved in those early visits to crop circles?
I was certainly aware that there was an energy discharge from the circles. And in many cases, people were made uncomfortable and often ill as a result of visiting them in the early 90s. And we called it getting zapped. And it's a phenomenon which has disappeared lately, largely, I think, because we're used to it.
Oh, interesting.
But there is very specifically an energy. And people talk about electrostatic and electromagnetic and all that stuff, which is fundamentally a desperate need for humanity to cage this phenomenon like a rare wild bird and give it a new name. or a familiar name, but there's never been any real demonstrable proof of the kind of energy which is being used here.
Okay. Yeah, I find that fascinating. I saw many years ago someone videotaped, and I think it was a total, you know, it was totally a surprise to the photographer or the videographer who was shooting the field. Lights that emulated in and out, emanated in and out of the fields as these crop circles were being formed. And I don't know the name of it, but
Oliver's Castle. Oliver's Castle.
Oh, okay.
1996.
Was that film analyzed with any depth to discern what those lights were, or is that one of those phenomena we just got to scratch our heads about?
Well, the film was widely examined, as far as I'm concerned, the only thing that was proven definitively was that it was not fake. It was real. And there were many analyses of it, which prevent various things. I mean, one of the most interesting was that it demonstrated that as the crop formation was being laid below the lights, the energy moved outwards. From the center. Now, I surveyed that formation in some depth, and what was interesting was that the center circle, the first ring of six around the center, were very, very high quality and precisely made. But then when you went to rings two and three, the energy and accuracy of the satellite formations dropped very clearly. So I think that certainly it demonstrated that the forming energy seems to diminish as it goes outwards.
It's very interesting how these circles are formed, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about what I find is a very interesting phenomenon in the formation of crop circles, in that the actual stalk of the grain isn't broken as it's laid; it's bent in such a way that it doesn't destroy the living force within the grain. It bends it, and the crop keeps growing, which is fascinating.
It continues to ripen, yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's one of the most fascinating subjects. Go ahead.
I have to say, I don't know. I must make it clear. I do not claim to know, and nobody has a real handle on what's going on. The phenomenon shows an enormous respect for plant life and for every form of life, really. And the wheat or plant or crop stems are treated very gently. They are bent over rather than being bashed down. Mm-hmm. And this angle is formed by some kind of energy, I don't know what, but a right angle is formed very often in the stem. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I don't know how.
It's a fascinating phenomenon. Yeah. And can you give us an idea of the creation of the circle and then post-phenomenon? In other words, does as the circle is formed and it's completed, does the circle stay in its shape, or does the grain that's been bent continue to grow and then eventually fill in the space?
Well, in the earliest crop in the season is barley, and barley more than subsequent crops. Actually, it's not the first, it's the second. The first is oilseed rape, which I think is called canola in America.
Canola oil, yeah.
But barley is the first one with that kind of fineness. And there's the formations in barley are very, very delicate. But they last only 2 or 3 days because the crop tends to grow back to the sky very quickly and very often. Whereas, for example, a wheat formation will very often hold its shape for weeks. Mm-hmm. Once it's laid down, it will stay laid down.
Okay.
But a barley formation very often will virtually disappear within the first week.
So the formation will be undetectable after...
Well, it won't be undetectable. It will be largely disappeared.
But is it your experience, and I don't even... This is an interesting question I've just thought about. Does the farmer, when he's cultivating the wheat, when it's ready to be plucked, is there an issue with going over those circles, or does the...
You're entering a completely new volume of discussion here. When you mention the Wiltshire farmer, the Wiltshire farmer is a very particular species of human being. And they have many reactions. Some farmers consider the arrival of a crop circle on their land to be a blessing. But this is a very rare animal. Most farmers are dogged in the insistence that all crop circles are acts of vandalism.
Oh.
And so very often they will cut them out immediately.
Interesting. Wow.
And this produces a certain degree of tension every year.
Interesting. Yeah, I can imagine why, because they don't want people climbing over the fence and running out to see the crop circles, probably.
Exactly right, yeah.
I mean,
bless them, it's their land and it's their livelihood, and they really, and I have to say the visitors generally tend to behave very badly. They don't... they're walking on someone else's land. One might say they're visiting someone else's garden. Mm-hmm. And one would hope they would treat it with some respect. And they don't. They just barge in. And, for example, there are tram lines, tractor lines, which are there in the field. And we advise people to use the tram lines to enter the formations. Mm-hmm. But they don't. They just cut across the field. Mm-hmm. And a wheat field is like rice paper. Mm-hmm. Once it's marked, it's the end of the question. It's there forever.
Let me ask you, Michael, I have never been into a crop circle, and I don't know of any – well, I mean, I'm here in Northern California in San Francisco, and I know they have some down in the valley. But when there's word of a crop circle, is it like a free-for-all? Do people just get in their car and legions of people go and go – traveling? Is it like reported to the point where people just...
One level, yes.
Okay.
At another level, the people, my colleagues who are in this seriously, do our best to work with the farmer to protect their field. Mm. But it's a battle.
I can imagine if you have a whole bunch of people, busloads. Yeah. Tell me about your feeling on the various types of formations and their level of sophistication. In the beginning of the show, you said that you went out to an early circle, which was kind of like the beginning of your research and your investigation. But as I looked at a series of posters that you had on your site, and the first one's 1997, and I think the last one ends at 2004. And the collection of circles doesn't seem to deviate too much from the very earliest period to the last poster, and even to today. Would you say there has been a development of design or sophistication over the years?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Okay. How do you explain it?
I explain it because this is a sort of conversation. And we, the students, are inevitably getting better at understanding what the teacher is giving us. Mm-hmm. And so the formations are, by definition, more focused and more elaborate.
Hmm. That's fascinating. Some of the crop circle formations are not circles at all, but more intricate designs that really, in many cases, defy logic. They're really fascinating to look at. Have you begun to discern a basic language or message in crop circles?
I've begun to discern many languages in it. I think it's a conversation with us. And I think what is being told is that we are not alone and that we are being watched. And they seem to me to be loving and caring and very concerned for our transition to another dimension.
Hmm.
But they know us better than we know ourselves.
Hmm.
And they do not approach too directly because they know, as we know, that when you approach a less evolved civilization, you kill it.
Interesting.
And God knows here on Earth we have a lot of experience of that. And they seem to me to be enormously ethical and moral in their behavior. And in a way, they're obeying what Captain Kirk and the crew of the Starship Enterprise were concerned about, which was the prime directive.
The prime directive, exactly. Yeah, don't interfere.
Don't interfere. Yeah. And I think they have obeyed that for centuries, if not millennia. But they now are looking and they're seeing that if they don't interfere, we will completely destroy ourselves and the planet within months.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Well, let me ask you another question, and this is one that I ask because I understand on a certain personal level energetics. I practice Reiki, and I have a sense of energy. when you walk in those crop circles and this energy is passed up into your body, do you think you've been changed in certain way by these energetics?
Yes.
Tell us what you believe and what the sensation.
I've got multiple sclerosis, and I've had multiple sclerosis coincidentally. It was diagnosed just a few weeks away from the time I went into my first crop circle.
Oh, back in the late 90s. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
You were diagnosed with MS. Okay.
Yeah. So that two parallel trajectories in my life have been, on the one hand, MS, and on the other hand, the crop circles.
Hmm.
I believe that I've been very much sustained by crop circle energy.
Hmm.
I think I will be dead by now without crop circles.
Fascinating. Do you have any dreams or insights or other dimensional types of experiences since this time? Has it shifted you on a subtle level that in our current medical or technological language, we can't explain what's happened to you, but perhaps this experience shifted you in a certain way, as you say, maybe enlivened you physically to deal with your health issue, but maybe on a subtle level, mentally and spiritually too.
Well, I think my work in the circles has been constantly nurtured and guided by others. I think that, and you know, this is completely lunacy. This sounds like a new age nutcase.
Yeah.
But all of us who work closely with the circles can cite experiences of intuitions and coincidences that are just too regular and too astonishing to be unconnected with the thing.
Interesting. So would you say your dreams have become more vivid, or do you have an occasional dream that's like, oh my God, what the hell is that all about?
It doesn't come to me in dreams, quite honestly. It comes in intuitive realizations, I think.
Okay. Let's get into this fascinating book, Crop Circles, The Bones of Gods. You describe a couple of the early phenomenal crop circles that are just out of this world. They're not simple circles anymore, engaging circles. The one I want to talk about, and you have a whole chapter, is the Barbary Castle formation, which appeared in 1991. And you actually did some fascinating field survey on that. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that? The main one.
The 1991 Barbary Castle formation was very important, but somehow less articulate than its sister, which came down in 2008 and which signaled it had an elaborate geometrical way of signaling pi, the number for pi.
Really?
And it's a very beautiful and elegant and imaginative formation, which, when unpicked, stated very specifically pi in a way which I can't explain over the radio. I need diagrams to explain. What is the importance of pi? pi is the constant which we use for the calculation of circles, spheres, cylinders, cones, but fundamentally circles. Pi is the mathematical constant which we use for all calculations involving circularity. Now, why this is so important for me is that in the ancient world, the circle has been the symbol of God, heaven, the infinite, the spiritual, while the square is the symbol of the earth and mechanical reality. The squaring of the circle is an ancient exercise in sacred geometry whereby, without measurement or a calculator, using only a compass, a pencil, and a straight edge, you have to construct a circle whose circumference is exactly the length of the four sides of the square's perimeter.
Hmm.
Now, that is a simple geometric exercise, you may think, but it has an enormous weighted spiritual significance in that, in squaring the circle, or rather circling the square, in making them equal, you are implying that the square earth is becoming more spiritual, that the world approaches heaven through this symbolism. Now, for many, many years, the crop circles have, in their diagrammatic form, reiterated this particular exercise. And I think what is being said to us is that Earth is being transformed to a higher level of spirituality and dimensionality, and their constant reiteration of this exercise, this squaring of the circle, emphasizes that. And I think the pi symbol, or the pi number, transmitted in the Barbary Castle formation, who's saying that pi, the constant, is the key to the squaring of the circle.
Mm. You said,
is that incoherent?
No, it makes sense. But you're talking about very lofty kinds of thinking about, you know, consciousness and unknown beings, or, you know, an evolved civilization trying to communicate these complex ideas to us. And the problem is, and I see it as a problem, is a lot of human beings are on a very different evolutionary scale. Some are not here to look at the subtleties that you described. They just want the dollar. That's about it.
Yeah.
And then those of us who do want to know the subtleties of what consciousness is all about are interested in that message.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a constant problem. Imagine for a moment we're in 1600, and I come up to you and I say, hey, listen, Cliff, it's not flat. It's not flat out there. It's a ball. It's a sphere. Imagine that.
Yeah.
You would kill me. Or imagine, for instance, we're at the beginning of the 20th century, and I come up and I say, Cliff, I've got a machine that will fly in the sky.
Exactly.
And now I'm telling you that these are messages from another evolved civilization which is working hard to help humanity.
Hmm.
That's my view.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that because we now know that crop circles are worldwide. They are best expressed in England for some reason, maybe because it's cold there and the crops are very green and they're very visible or something. I don't know. There's just something about the England version of crop circles is just much more definitive in design than other parts of the world. But getting to that, would you say that there is a sacred geometry in play? And you talk a lot about that. A timeless sacred geometry.
Yes. No question. They understand it better than we do.
Okay. And would you say, when you say sacred geometry, my thinking of it is that it's sacred because it in its shape, it creates energy, and then also there's subtle unconscious messaging involved too.
Well, that's one way of dealing with it. The other way I think is that sacred geometry really exists if its practitioner is attempting in some way to approach a higher level of consciousness. That's one way of looking at it. It's the way I like to look at it. That access to sacred geometry is improving to people, but also it starts in a very delicate way to connect you with other realms.
Yes, yes. So given that information, would you say that when a crop circle is reproduced, that in a photograph or in a art form, that when we're looking at it, it's meant to drill down into our subconscious and bring out some kind of level of awareness?
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I was an architect before. And because of that, I had a fundamental knowledge of drawing and pattern and shape and dimension and number. But my grab onto the phenomenon has always been through the shape and the drawing of the shape. Mm-hmm. So I have drawn, I would imagine, thousands of crop circles. Mm-hmm. And what is very interesting is that my health progressively has limited my ability to access the formations directly. But I was always able to draw them. I was always able to take a photograph and produce an accurate black and white silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always able to see within that diagram, within that silhouette, remarkable things.
Mm.
So for me, the key to the door has always been the drawings,
mm-hmm.
always been the shape. And I think, I live my life, one wall of my living room is covered with posters of crop circles. So I've lived with these shapes forever. And I mean, now I've got 18 or 20 drawings of this last season, 2016 formations, up on one wall as well. So I'm surrounded by this imagery. And I believe, I know, it's beneficial. It does me good. It does everybody good. I mean, when I do seminars here, I advise everybody to take a photo of their major, of a formation they really like, and to draw it. To get a piece of paper, to draw it. They don't have to be Leonardo da Vinci. They've got to draw it. And at the end, they tear it up because it's not good enough. Get another piece of paper, draw it again. And on every occasion, you will discover something more about the junctions, the corners, the circles, the proportions, the ratios. The act of drawing it is a kind of amplifier of the act of looking. So I recommend my students and visitors to do this.
Fascinating. Let's get down to it here. We've talked a little bit about, you believe there are these crop circles, that the consciousness behind these crop circles is very advanced and so on and so forth. What do you speculate? Do you think they're off-world beings? Do you think they're beings that are with us, that are on a higher consciousness, that have always been on Earth?
Yes.
Talk about that.
Well, I mean, I have in on my site, which is called Michael Glickman on Crop Circles, I've got a four-part blog, four sections, called Who Might They Be? Which is an attempt to contain the spirit of the circle makers. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows. But I've been working with them and staring at them for 26 years. I think I am entitled to a hypothesis, a speculation. And so I wrote this blog about who I think they might be and what I think they're doing. And that represents my thinking about it based on the fundamental statement that I don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows. Anybody who says anything definite about the circles is either A, a fool, or B, a liar. Maybe both, because nobody knows.
There's a lot of BS around them too, and we'll talk in a minute about the forgers. I'll call them forgers. But before we go there, I feel that what you're saying is that these, the consciousness, the beings, if they are physical beings behind these crop circles, are very intelligent, highly intelligent, maybe thousands and thousands of million years ahead of us. And this is how they communicate, which is through symbology. But you bring up a number of good points in that by the formation of the symbology, not only is it a message, but there's subtleness, there's subtleties to the patterns that go very deep in a physical human consciousness and body. And that statement alone shows that it's a highly evolved consciousness that's trying to communicate with us. But I mean, you said in the early part of the program, there's it could be off-world beings that are flying around in UFOs. A number of crop circle researchers have said, yes, I've seen UFOs nearby, and maybe they're shooting down beams and creating circles. Is it a whole bunch of things, or is it one level of group that's doing it? What do you say? Who's forming these circles?
I think it is a federation of beings. A federation of planetary civilizations who have been increasingly appalled over the centuries by our shocking behavior. And they sit back on what passes for their thumbs and witness our mindless killing of ourselves, the destruction of our forests, the pollution of our air and our oceans, and they very much have been subscribers to the Prime Directive that they don't interfere. But I think they've reached a point where they've seen we are about to plunge over the edge of the precipice.
Mm.
So they've taken the decision, we've got to move in. Now, here on Earth, we think contact with these beings will be the kind of contact which our consciousness holds dear. They will arrive in metallic craft and with ray guns, and they will try and destroy us. And that's not the case. They will not arrive. They are not knocking on the door trying to sell us something. They're trying to help us take the next step in our consciousness and our civilization to stop behaving like dysfunctional teenagers.
Hmm. It's amazing. I in your worldview of the phenomenon is, I mean, they're all over the place. I mean, the crop circles are everywhere. Is there one area that communicates better than the next in terms of crop circles?
Well, the crop circles currently in over 60 countries, and England has been consistently remarkable, but Germany and Holland and Italy have had some amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
Really good ones.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Brazil on the list too, and some of those Central and South America countries have in circles.
And they will develop. It'll become more and more widespread.
Wow. Okay, let's talk about what was very sad about this phenomenon, which is the hoaxers. I don't know when it began. You probably know better than I do, but at some point,
1991.
Okay. Oh, really? That's when it started. At some point, people thought it would be funny to begin to emulate crop circles, and some of the current ones. There was one in California that was based on a company's logo that was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
The level of sophistication is such that not only do they emulate some of the true crop circles that are out there, they confuse people. Can you talk a little bit about this?
I believe that there are three categories of hoax. The primary category of hoax now is the one carried out by contractors for advertising agencies and public relations operations.
Oh, God.
And it's very interesting that the hoaxers fundamentally want to deceive, and they have allied themselves basically with advertising and PR. Mm-hmm. So they also make much more money than anybody in research does. They make a lot of money.
Right.
So that's category one. Category two are the attempts to hoax a crop circle. I don't know that they've ever done one. I don't think there is one. For many years, I've said to my colleagues, there's all this noise about hoaxes and fakes. Name me the best hoax this year. They can never do that. And I say, okay, name me the best hoax ever. They can't do it. They're all crummy stompings in wheat fields, easily observable. So, in my view, there is no real man-made phenomenon. It's entirely different, this commercial making of trademarks and logos.
Mm-hmm.
But the real formations, there's a guy who speaks every year at our devices lectures, a young man who simply photographs and studies at ground level the details of the way the wheat is manipulated. And this is a simply breathtaking show every year. He shows chrysanthemums, weaves, swirls, interweaving, almost like lace making. That the idea of this being done by people with planks is ludicrous. Very often the laid crop lies in between stem by stem a standing crop, and you would need a bunch of people on their hands and knees working with little fingers like the little boys who make oriental rugs to give it this level of detail. And the problem is, people come along, they see a patch of wheat which has been crudely stamped down, and they say, oh, a crop circle. It's not a crop circle. It's a bunch of wheat that has been crudely vandalized.
Mm-hmm.
And we have very little discernment. We're presented with miracles, and we have no way of assessing them properly. And it's very this is very depressing to me.
I would say it would be depressing simply because it's like, why are you doing this? You know, we need to have clarity. We don't need to have these goddamn fake crop circles. But that gets to my next question, and I don't know if you've thought about this or not. To my mind, these fake circles are a form of disinformation, a form of creating what appears to be an authentic crop circle. And in many cases, and in fact, in your case too, you've been fooled by what appears to be a naturally formed crop circle that some son of a bitch decided to joke and create.
I think they succeed very, very rarely in fooling us.
Well, that one that you talk about that I saw in California that's based on The logo is very intricate. In fact,
not so intricate. It isn't intricate.
Oh, okay.
It's a series of rectangular spaces. I mean, I think it was very competently carried out, but it doesn't have the intricacy of the real thing.
Interesting. Let's get into some of the good ones. Can you give me a good example of a crop circle that has a clear message or close to a clear message that is, are they all pretty hard to discern?
They're all part of a larger narrative. And it's very difficult to pick one out and say this was very important. But, I mean, the other thing is that we get pockets of information in one year. There'll be a cluster of formations which we seem to have a meaning for somebody. And then that narrative will end and something new will come up the following year. But you need... I can't give you a kind of one bite answer to your question, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say to you, for example, that the formations of the year 2000 were very important. But I would need to spend an hour with diagrams to explain which and why and where. Okay. It's a very dense study.
Has anyone cataloged and organized the formations in such a way that they're grouped into similar patterns and maybe try to break it down as to, you know, the most rudimentary design composition?
I tried in a very rudimentary way to do that in my first little book, mm-hmm. Crop Circles. And there is a guy in Germany who maintains a running catalogue of every crop circle on the planet. And he issues pages every year from 60 or 70 countries. And he's now recorded something over 7,000 crop circles. But the job of grouping these is beyond us.
So they're all, they're still, in your estimation, they're still so advanced. We just, you know.
Yeah.
There's no Rosetta Stone yet.
Oh, miles away. Miles away. I'm obviously biased. I'm sold on this. But I think that everybody who's listening to this should sell their house. And make arrangements to come over this summer and have a look at this. These are miracles of enormous world significance, and people who miss the chance to visit them are crazy, in my view. I think you should grab at it. Come over and see it.
Yeah, it's a phenomenon. A couple more questions, and I know it's getting late there. this energy discharge that's coming from these crop circles, I've heard a number of people talk about them. I mean, you spoke about them in the beginning of the show. It's tactile. You can actually feel it. And you said something I thought was quite interesting. You said in the early days of the discovery, the discharge or the remaining energy was so significant that it kind of knocked you, blew you, knocked you, the wind out of you. And they maybe they've toned it down a little bit so that it's more accessible. Do you think that in a way they're designed to physically enter, walk into to get that vibe, or are they meant more to see be seen?
I think the tangible energy is still available to people. There are people who can physically sense the energy. I was never good at this. I mean, different people have different strengths. My strength is shape and geometry and what I see through my eyes. But other people are able to walk into a formation and to perceive the energy very clearly through their hands and their bodies. Mm-hmm. And in my view, this energy is in many ways encapsulated in the geometric form, even when it's a photograph or a drawing. People are often very deeply affected by the drawing. So I can't say more than that.
Interesting. In the final few minutes we have here, based on your vast, vast experience and discovery, what do you think the message is? I mean, you gave it ahead of time that keep an eye on your planet, but is there any more of is there anything that's telling us on a physical level, look, we're here, you need to begin thinking about not just yourself but more of the planet, which is Gaia, who is supports your living in this universe. What do you say? What's the message?
I think they're telling us as individuals to open our eyes and to open our hearts. As individuals, I think they are telling us as a collective to soften and to transform ourselves. That's very hard. That's what they expect of us.
That's amazing. I want to remind our audience that Michael has a wonderful website. It's called Michael Glickman on Crop Circles. It's at the URL is Michael Glickman on cropcircles.com. Actually, I found it by just punching in Michael Glickman. It's GLICKMAN. And it's a wonderful site. It's got Michael writing a wonderful blog. And you have something that I thought was quite fun. You have a tea time where you have people who come by. Talk a little bit about tea time. It looks like a wonderful program.
Well, years ago, I used to get – because I'm very much attached – to my house. I can't go striding about anymore. People used to visit me.
Yeah.
And I was finding that the summers were very crowded. And so I thought I would organize this. I've got a nice deck outside the house, and visiting groups would book a time, and they would come, we would sit on the deck, I would give them tea and cookies, and we would talk about crop circles for 2 or 3 hours. And it was always fun. There was never a program. It evolves very much in the spirit of those who are visiting us. But I love it. And I've had people from North America, Canada, USA, Mexico, Brazil, and then throughout Europe, Australia, wherever.
Wonderful.
And then we have a nice time and explore some interesting things.
That's very cool. I love it. So those of you listening, check out the website. And I really encourage people who want to get a good sense of not only the hardcore photos of variety of crop circles that have appeared in England, but also a great understanding that Michael provides on the subtleties of the crop circle phenomenon, and maybe what most of the general reporting media talks about, which is this, like, oh my God, what is this all about, and not much more. Michael goes into some great detail in the book, Crop Circles, The Bones of God. Wonderful. Michael, thank you very much. I've enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you.
Yes, and I think we'll definitely see what else is going on and maybe check back with you in the future.
Well, I hope to see you here this summer.
2017, that's right. Yeah, we're right in the thick of the winter. So, yeah, we'll see. I haven't been to that part of England, so I would like to see a crop circle. I think that'd be fantastic. All right, have a great holiday, Michael, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. Same to you.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. Michael is really hard to get a hold of, and I was really happy he could speak to us about the crop circles, because that's a phenomenon. And I don't think we have the technology to really know what's going on yet. I think it's many years before we can develop scanning technology to decipher what is going on in these energetic fields. So really fun. First of the year, my next week's guest is Laird Scranton. There's a new book that he's written. It won't be out for another week or so. The Mysteries of Skara Brae, Neolithic Scotland, and the Origins of Ancient Egypt. It's a new site. It's thought to be kind of like the Stonehenge in the UK, in England, but very, very sophisticated, very advanced. There's kind of links to Göbekli Tepe that will be discussed, and it's a brand new book and a whole new site and an eye-opener. I hope you'll join me. Happy New Year to you. I hope the new year is going to bring you what you need, what you want, and fulfill your desires. And I will talk to you again in 2017. Take care.
They're going to kill the love of my life.
Casey!
If I don't go back to what I was doing.
Our line of work is quite brutal and quite ruthless.
How far would you go for love?
You steal a truck, bring it to me. Then you make your money.
Is it dangerous?
Of course it's dangerous!
Nicholas Holt, Felicity Jones, with Ben Kingsley and Anthony Hopkins.
All this trouble, all this pain for love.
Collide. Now playing. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13.